I
People love Glitter and Metroid.
Yeah, they do. I think they love someone, you for having the audacity to even say such a thing.
And someone really loved James's booze jokes, which I didn't even hear until editing.
Same. I mean, I heard him saying it, but I couldn't really process what the joke was. I could tell that you meant it to be funny, but I was in the middle of the conversation.
I was inordinately pissed that John didn't respond to that one.
It was too easy. Those jokes.
Bullshit. You didn't go there.
It was too.
You don't pass up easy jokes.
Oh, come on. Like, booze.
Just what have you passed up easy jokes, John?
Like, booze the character and booze the drink.
He was talking about like how it affects your ability to move and stuff. It's like, yeah, booze does that.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
No, it's a good joke.
John, you're just mad you didn't think of it. You're just mad you didn't think of it.
I'm not saying it's a bad joke. I'm just saying
you're just too salty, John.
I'm just saying it's such an obvious joke, James. I expect more.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I've often had to explain to people that Skype makes these James's Mystery Science Theater style humor kind of come across very difficult to follow.
I always hear it, though. I always do.
Because you're listening.
I listen to James because I know he's always making the little comments, so.
It's very hard when you're talking and James is trying to insert these little things. It's very, very hard to pick it out.
Yep.
And that's partly because Skype tends to mute other people partially while you're the one speaking.
Yep.
And
so
I am often the one speaking, so I tend to not hear them until the final show.
It's like a fucking ballpark pretzel in here. It's just salt everywhere.
But they do make me laugh. I mean, I do think they're funny. I just at the time I don't always pick up on them, but when I'm editing, I leave them in for sure. All right. I sure do. Okay, here we go. Welcome back, everyone. It's time for another Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 415. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are Guillaume Veillette.
Hello, senpai.
John Lindemann.
Cheaper than amiibos and even more fun to collect.
And James Jones.
What? The fuck, John?
What the fuck indeed?
God damn it.
Getting the show started off with some selective deamplification, and we are kind of back to our normal format this week. We're going to do some new business and listener mail coming up later. We're also working hard to try to get you an update on the retroactive feature, hopefully at the end of the show. So first up, we are going to be talking about video games once again, and Mr. Guillaume Veillette is going to go first.
Sure. Well, I've... For a few days now, I finished Bayonetta 2, and I've been going back to the game, like, constantly. I cannot stop playing Bayonetta 2, and that's pretty surprising to me, because I did not expect that. I should have seen it coming, because...
He likes it! He really likes it!
Yeah,
There's always a moment when you're playing, like, whoa, this is it!
Right, well, you know, like, I played through the first game on normal, and then I set that aside, I started the second one, and the second game is much easier. And that's usually not the way to rope me in, you know, like, that's not when it clicks for me. And so I was kind of, like, going through the motion through through Bayonetta 2. And, the game didn't click with me for that reason, and also because, unlike James, like, the humor doesn't do it for me at all. And I have been diligently watching the cutscenes, but I just hate them. I really, really hate them. I hate these characters. I hate, you know, the little kid voiced by a guy from, like, Indiana who's trying to do an English accent. And I hate Bayonetta calling him, like, a little one, just like in the first game. I hate that Bayonetta is still, like, the mother figure to some kid that they put in the game.
That void in your soul must hurt so bad.
I hate that the story is basically the same, right down to, like, the time loop gimmicks. I hate this game story. But, so, you know, I've been going back to the game, and I've been playing on hard, which... already, like, made the experience a little bit more fun to me, because there's more at stake. When I first went through the game on normal, I almost never even used items, you know, unlike the first game where I kept dying and using items. This time, like, not only I didn't really die, but I didn't use the healing items.
Yeah, I'm playing I so after we did our Game of the Year stuff, I went back to Bayonetta 1 because I really would prefer to play them in order, all things mm-hmm. being equal. And now that I don't have that pressure to play through at least some portion of 2, I figured I'd go back to 1 and try to finish it. And I'm probably halfway through it now. I've definitely put some time into it. And that game, I mean, I'm on the normal difficulty, I think, the default, and it's pretty tough. And it is. Sometimes I'm running into enemies where either they're extremely difficult to dodge for whatever reason, or they do an incredible amount of damage when they hit you, or both.
Right.
And there's just certain kinds of, like, I still feel like I'm more or less competent at the dodging and the fighting, but there's just certain enemies, if they just catch you in an attack, it's going to take off like half your life bar. It's mm-hmm. really hard to get through those guys without using a bunch of healing items.
I think another part is the enemies in 2 tend to telegraph a little better. So
yeah,
dodging is a little easier.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. There's maybe a couple of exceptions. Like there are these kind of mechanical looking enemies in hell that are a little bit harder to tell when they're going to hit you or not. But yeah, like overall, it's easier. And I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad thing. Maybe I should have been playing on hard from the beginning, because it does say like, oh, if you're used to this combat system, hard is maybe the way to go. But I didn't do that. But yeah, now I find it more engaging, if simply because, like, when I went through the game the first time, I basically only used one combo. And this time, oh shit, like, I'm forced to actually, like, try to juggle the enemies and things like that. So it's a little bit more fun. But there's other things that are making the game more fun to me, like, the second time around, because now I've bought some of the, fan service, like, some of the Nintendo costumes. Not the other kind of fan service.
Some of them, they're kind of one and the same in this game.
Yeah, I know. The whole game is a type of fan service, but the whole Nintendo thing, I'm enjoying a little bit more. Anyway, just like the costumes that you can give Bayonetta are really, really fun. Like, they don't just change her appearance. And they don't even just change her abilities. They also change, like, some of the little things around in the world. Like, if you use the Galactic Bounty Hunter costume, then instead of turning into some sort of cheetah when you tap the dodge button twice, you turn into the Morph Ball, you know? And you get, like, the arm cannon, and you can charge it and shoot it just like you would in, you know, a Metroid game. So that's pretty cool. But then
how do you unlock the costumes in Bayo 2? Because you start out with 3 different ones in
Cash
Bayo
money,
1.
Son.
Yeah, yeah, they're immediately available, right? Yeah, you have to pay. But also,
in-game
even
currency,
after
not
I had paid.
Real world currency.
Right. Even after I had paid the halos for them, I didn't know how to access them. I had to go into, I had to look up online, basically. I had to read the fucking manual, as they say. And, it's not easy. Like, it's, you know, that menu, selection that you usually ignore before starting a level. It's in there. You know, you've
not
got
the normal,
like,
menu, the other menu.
Right. Like, there's like the start, there's the shop on the left, and then there's menu on the right. And you would think, well, it's probably, yeah, anyway, like that's where you change the costume.
It's on the level select screen.
Yeah. I find it a little bit, it could have been clearer. It could have been,
I think it mentions it once at the very, very, very beginning of the game before you have any costumes.
Right.
And then never mentions it again.
Exactly. But anyway, it's worth checking out because, like, there's a Samus costume, there's a, you know, a Hero of Time costume, and then the halos turn into rupees. And when you open a chest, it makes the you know, the opening chest chime. And when you solve a puzzle in Bayonetta, it makes the chime that you would expect from a Zelda game. You can have the princess, like Mario princesses costumes, and they're super cute. Like the Daisy costume has a little Luigi kind of trinket, like plushie at her waist, and then you collect coins. And the Wicked Weave attacks are actually like Bowser arms and feet. So that's pretty cool. But probably the coolest is the Star Fox costume, because then, like, the jet and 2 of the levels of this game turn into the R-Wing. And, you know, the game has been out for a while, so I'm going to spoil this. But there's one level where you basically, like, you're on top of the jet and you're shooting enemies. You're controlling the jet. And so it turns into the R-Wing, and it kind of, when you use the that costume, it kind of plays a little bit more like Star Fox. Like the physics of moving around are a little bit different, and you get like the charge homing shot, and you get the bomb, and so it's kind of like a bonus Star Fox level. So that's really, really cool.
That's pretty cool. So that's not just some cheese kind of like, have some new costumes kind of thing that they easily could have done.
Right.
It almost supports my prediction from last week that Platinum might make a new Star Fox.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it probably still doesn't have as much fan service as something like Hyrule Warriors, but I still feel like
ever had that much fan service.
I know. Yeah, but we're... I still think, like, even though Nintendo did, like, kind of talk about it a little bit, like, I feel like they could have emphasized that aspect of Bayonetta a little bit more. And I just think that Nintendo could have given Bayonetta 2 more marketing power in general. Like, I don't want to bash Hyrule Warriors without playing it, but I have played a Musou game before, and I didn't really enjoy it. And I feel like something that Bayonetta 2 should have done better in general. Maybe not better than Hyrule Warriors, but...
seems like a more unique product.
Saying anything should do better than a game wearing the Zelda franchise, you're going to need to be bringing some pretty heavy guns.
That's not even what I'm saying. I'm just saying that Nintendo could have done better to convince Nintendo fans to give this a try, because I think there's really a lot more to enjoy in this game than most Nintendo fans would probably expect.
I mean, unlike a lot of their games, I mean, it did have a marketing plan, which is kind of...
That's true. That's true. And they did, like, offer the first game for free. Like, they ported it, and, for free, quote-unquote. But that, I almost think, it probably appeals more to fans, like, people who are already fans of Bayonetta. Because, you know, you have to pay $30, I think, to buy the first one if you haven't bought the second one. So it's not... You know, it's not like a free taste of Bayonetta. It's not a look at what this kind of game does. There is a demo for Bayonetta 2, but it's very, very short and might not tell someone, like, oh, you're going to enjoy, like, this, but a whole lot more of it, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. I think they could have done more. It's a really, really good game. And I also want to quickly touch on the online mode in this game. It's surprisingly fun. Like, I've really been enjoying it. It's really simple. You've got these arenas, kind of like the Muspelheim challenges in the main game. Like, it's that arena, and these enemies spawn in it, and two players compete, basically cooperate to kill them all and compete to get the most halos. And so, like, you challenge someone in, like, six sets of this, and the person who gets the most halos, who wins the most sets, wins. And it's probably the quickest way to gain halos in this game. So I highly recommend trying it. The connection is almost instantaneous. And then you can play against a CPU if you don't find... Like, there's always someone online for some reason. Like, the game might not have sold that much, but I've always found, like, a few dozen people playing at all times.
Well, they're all fake.
Maybe. But, like, if you don't want to join a quick match with a stranger, or you can just, like, play against the AI, and then, like, someone can join your game, you can accept them. And at the end, when you're done, you can, like, it prompts you, do you want to friend this person, yes or no? And, very quick, very simple, and a lot of fun. And, I'm very surprised by that.
I will say that the last... unlock you can buy, the most expensive item in the store in the Gates of Hell is I'm blanking on his name now.
It's a French name too.
Yeah, it is. it's the guy who runs the Gates of Hell, and at one point in the game you see him fight, and he just wrecks house.
Right.
Yeah. That's about how that goes. It's a stupid amount of halos worth, but basically it's just a win button when you go play people online.
Oh boy. Yeah, I still haven't unlocked them. It's beautiful. Like, it's 900,000 times the halos that any other item costs. So
it's just straight nines across. So I pulled it off because for Game of the Year, I wanted to squeeze it in. So I ran through the game on, like, normal, right after just playing the first game, and got about halfway through and restarted after buying all the upgrades that made me really good, and just racked up platinum, 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 platinum.
Holy shit.
Wait, so you can restart the game but keep all of the items that you bought?
Yep. Your items in Halos carry over through replays.
At any time, anyway, like you can go back to previous chapters.
Yep.
So, you know, well, you can always start over.
Yeah.
That's true.
And
yeah, I guess so.
And once you've got items like the chainsaw feet, or well, the chainsaws mm-hmm. that you put on your feet and ride them around like rollerblades, and they cause damage just by you running around and keep your combo going, like you can really rack up
those
absurdest combos. So I had those on my feet and whips on my hand, and I was just this blur of just chaos.
He's talking about the game, John.
Yeah, exactly.
Not in real life.
Clearly, this game has treasures that I've yet to experience. So looking forward to spending more time with Bayonetta 2.
Yeah, I have to say, I would have probably put that at least as my number 5 if I had played more of it. But in the middle of the first playthrough, I just wasn't feeling it.
Right. Right. Okay, well, we'll see if we have time to come back around to your other game, Guillaume. But for now, why don't we move on to what James has been playing?
So, been busy, busy couple weeks preparing for stuff at work, so I haven't had a chance to pick up anything new. Put into the console, because I still have that pile of stuff that I teased on Twitter a few months ago I'm still working through. But I have used the time I have to go through and do some burn down on stuff I have sort of hanging out. Finally, shocking them, this game's gonna come back up. Finally managed to finish the Atelier game I was playing, which does the cardinal sin of RPGs of you've completed the story, here's a handful of missions that will take you forever and are not interesting.
Oh boy, that's when I just stop.
Yeah,
I stop playing.
Just don't do
that. Yeah, but they don't actually give you the end story until time runs out on those objectives. So you have to sit through it just to get to the actual. It's like, oh, you finished the final boss. We'll tell you how that went in a year's worth of game time. It's like, oh, thanks, game.
Oh, sweet. Thanks. Weird. So they're making you take a victory lap.
Yeah, essentially.
It's a forced victory lap.
So like, what I liked about that game was that it gave me these objectives, and I had to really struggle to get them in time. So I was constantly trying to prioritize and double task and things. It gives me a full year and a half to do the last set of objectives, some of which I know explicitly I cannot complete because I missed some gate to let me get to them. So I've basically just got all the time in the world to just fuck around. And that's not what this game is good at, so it's been kind of a weird experience of just trying to fuck around and burn through time. I could just say I would like to kill the next 120 days, but occasionally, like, these sub-story things pop up, so I'm actually kind of fishing through the time to see them. It was less enjoyable than I had previously had for the game. However, I still think the game is really good. It's in light of our conversation about Koei Tecmo's relationship with Nintendo last week, it's an interesting that game finally has an entry coming to 3DS that was in the Japan Nintendo Direct. It's a weird port of a downport of a PS3 game that came out like 4 years ago. It's like a side port from a different, like a phone version that removes the phone stuff and brings it back to a full game. It's weird. It's a weird fucking thing. But that series is actually now on Nintendo systems, which I can understand from a Koei Tecmo point. I need to train myself to not say Tecmo Koei because they don't call themselves that anymore. Because
yeah, I mean, it makes sense given that, you know, PS3 is sort of,
well, I mean, that game's away. Old on PS3. I mean, there's been 4 entries in the series since that one came out or something like that.
Right.
But PS4 hasn't really caught on in Japan. To be kind,
that's where I was going with it.
Yeah, Vita's okay in Japan, but 3DS is okay times many times.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I don't know that they're ever gonna shift their focus of the franchise that way, but I could see them. I mean, they're gonna make more of these games because they make a billion of them. I can see them trying to figure out what they want to do with that series.
Usually it's Koei Tecmo who brings them over, right? It's not like
no, it's Nisa.
Oh, okay.
So why, I don't particularly know, but I mean they need content, so I guess that's why they do it. Ultimately,
Nippon Ichi Software America.
Yeah. Most of which is not at, most of the stuff they bring over these days isn't actually Nippon Ichi Software. I mean, about half.
Yeah.
Of it.
Yeah, and I think they even got into like localizing anime.
Yep, they do that. You know, it's basically like, hey, we've got DVDs coming out of this weird ass anime about the fencing club that we've localized. You're like, okay,
it's happy hour. Yeah. Let's put out a press release.
It's an anime series about your high school fencing club. Cool.
is the Atelier series as weird ass as that stuff we're talking about?
No, it's. I mean, yes, it's weird, but it's weird in a different way. It's. I mean, it's a game where you make stuff. I mean, and you go hunt ingredients, you fight enemies, you gather things, and then you make recipes. And it's a time management game. It's a
right Harvest Moon kind of
in a way. But there is
that's
also
more like Cooking Mama.
There is also there's the system of like I need to make this the best. Like I can use lots of ingredients, but if I use this one, I can make it slightly better. And it's a lot
you
of
can
that.
Make it shiny.
I can make it stronger. I can make it. I can give it a new property. I mean, it's a weird game that has high addiction potential. Like you can get super obsessive with it, which I avoided for the most part until the very end game, where I suddenly had all the time in the world and I could obsess about these kinds of things.
Fantasy Life was kind of that way.
Yeah, a little bit. I've also been taking the feedback I've got for different playstyles for Persona Q, and I found that I'm taking too much advice. I need to stop trying to do that because I end up with these weird combinations of like, hey, you should definitely try to keep this person in the party. Also, you should play the game on super easy mode and just hunt down FOEs. Like, I need to focus on one idea and try that out and not try to do them all at one time. It's not going well.
Right.
The idea of running through with easy mode just to kill the FOEs and get their personas, I heard that from a couple different people. That makes a lot of sense because you get really high level personas and then you can use them to make the level not so uninviting. It's just a very long burn when you're trying to kill the FOEs, even on easy mode.
Right. And it's so, also,
but it does give you a nice little leg up. It's not required, no, but it gives you a good little leg up on the level you're going in, which means you don't have to leave as often, which means you don't have to spend as much money healing. It's a nice little perk just to get you started in a level, especially if you feel like I'm kind of weak here. And the goal obviously is to get money and items so you can get better equipment. And that's really what protects you from being too low a level. And that's started to trickle in now, but it's taken some time to get there. But what I want to talk about primarily is Smash Brothers, specifically the Smash Brothers level creator. I've been playing with our mutual friend Saran the other day, and a level that she created, which is just lava. It's just lava everywhere, and you can't survive. It's terrible. It's an awful experience to go through, and suffering is the only thing on the menu. But it got me thinking, I don't think you can make a good level in the Smash Brothers level creator. And by good, I mean a level that's actually like, this is a good test of my skills. That's not already covered by the existing level architecture. I'm pretty sure the only levels you can make in that thing that are any fun at all are trolling. So I take John can speak about my creation or my trademark masterpiece. I've created many things.
Not too much real estate, lots of bumpers and lots of barrels and
I mean, we're speaking specifically about Live and Burn.
You're not really on that level very long. Let's put it that way.
No. In fact, you actually don't want to be on it because that's a bad place. Mm-hmm. But there are cannons above you that are also bad. Effectively, there's nowhere safe you can go. And I feel like the only levels you can make are those kinds of levels. Like, you can make other levels. You can make a big flat. You can make Final Destination, but there's already 65 Final Destinations in this game. I mean.
Yeah. Too many. Even the levels that aren't Final Destination versions of levels kind of feel like Final Destination sometimes.
Yeah, there's not a lot of levels that have crazy stage hazards anymore. I mean, there's the Donkey Kong one that's based on Donkey Kong Country Returns.
Yeah, that's one of the better ones.
There's that ridiculously large level that's just lava everywhere.
There's Pac-Land, which I think gets undue hate. I think Pac-Land is
Pac-Land,
fine.
Here's the thing. God. Pac-Land is a terrible level if you're trying to actually fight.
Yeah.
Because you will not succeed. Basically, it's just who can platform with this janky platforming the longest?
Yeah, and it's
that's what that level is.
Which I'm fine. I mean, you know, the Super Mario Brothers level is kind of like the Mushroomy Kingdom was like that.
Yeah.
There's a long history of Smash Brothers levels where it's more about just who can survive the level and sometimes hit people on the way to screw them up.
Yeah, I mean, so I played.
And there's a Smash Run bout that is exactly that. It's like, see who can get the highest before time runs out.
Pac-Land
which
sucks.
Is exactly the same thing. You're probably.
I did a 1v1 with 2 AI level 9s for Ganondorfs on Pac-Land. Nobody made it past the waterfall stage.
Well,
nobody.
Since
everybody died.
Since we're talking about the level maker, can you create something that's like that? Like a scrolling level?
No, you can't. Yeah, and that's what's upsetting.
The tools are pretty limited for now.
I feel like
the
tools are more limited than we had in the predecessor game.
Yeah, well, Melee was just dropping tiles, so.
Yeah, but I feel like in Melee, there was more tile types. You know, there's more things you could do. Like, I haven't been able to make the automatic CD creator. Which was my favorite Melee stage, which is basically you just put the controller down and just tap A with your foot and you'll end up with all the CDs. But it's, I feel like, you know, all we get are Live and Burn, or we get these lava stages where essentially it's just every surface is lava except for the bare minimum bare ground you have to have. So basically you spawn and your idle animation will cause you to step on lava. Like, that's fun, kind of. It's stupid and it's ridiculous, but when the level sharing comes out, what I think we as a podcast need to do is we need to put out the call to our listeners to make the stupidest fucking level they can manage. And then we'll just sit here and judge them. Harshly, mostly. Because I think really.
Maybe we could stream them. We could play
them. We could. I think just recording us. Recording video of us playing on them and then our conversations about them. Because, I mean, John and I have been through the custom stage discussions. Basically, it usually ends with you just going, fuck this. What is happening right now? And I really think we could, our listeners have the capacity to game this thing, to make levels that just make us miserable. Just make us feel real sad.
Well,
that's what I want.
I also suspect that when they do release the level sharing feature, they could upgrade the editor, because you think about it. I mean, I've played very little with the editor, but it did seem very limited. And if you're going to go through the trouble of letting people share levels, you don't want all the levels people are sharing to be basically all the same thing. So there's an incentive there for Nintendo to give people more options and increase the variety and give people more creative tools. So I'm not sure they'll do that, because it's definitely even more work than they've already signed themselves up for, but it seems like a reasonable thing that they might do.
I would think they should. I will also say, when you're making a level, if your goal is to make it terrible, there's plenty of Sonic music to choose from.
Yes.
Ooh,
if you're
yes.
not in the Sonic music selection screen, you've already fucked up. I will say that Live and Learn is taken. I've got that one. But as far as I know, In His World is still available, and that song is fucking garbage. Knock yourself out. Just a tip from me to all those aspiring trolls out there.
I would call it a pro tip, but no, it's not.
I just imagine if you're stuck playing one of John's trademark, hey, it's 20 match, it's 20 stock gold hammers only, and then you find that my stage with Live and Learn is going to loop for the next 11 and a half minutes. I mean, you might contemplate just beating yourself to death with the Wii U gamepad. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's about equal, roughly. So just think about that. Think about that when you're making your level. We'll come back to this once the level shares out. I think we got a plan here.
Yeah, it's too bad that you can't play with user created levels in random matching, because then it would be almost a game to see how many people you could have forfeit because they hate your
level.
Yeah,
I mean, because so I mean, you could do some real shit. The other thing we've noticed is that if you've got time on your hands, there are a handful of characters that really cheat, like when they're the AI. Go ahead and do your start up an 8-player match on your Wii or Wii U. Drop out yourself and just make it 8 level 9 Dr. Marios. One of them, and we noticed this, there's always one AI that seems to cheat harder than the other. You'll find him. You'll figure it out pretty quick when at 20 stock, one of them is still at like 19 and all the others are like 12. Because that's the one that's able to air dodge literally every single attack.
Yeah, we also saw the AI, they really don't know how to play coin levels either.
No, they have no idea.
They're pretty clueless.
It's bizarre.
Like they play normally, like they don't play for the coins, they just play to kill. So
for that, you have to use an amiibo and train him.
Oh, boy.
Train the greed into him.
That's right up my alley.
So I will say, one of the matches we had, it was this lava stage that Seren had created, and I had picked the only item was Master Balls, which basically meant because the Master Ball Pokemon are so large, they took up all the space. So unless it was your Pokemon, you couldn't stand on the stage. So you might die two or three times every time somebody got a Groudon. Like, that was just going to happen. And the AI just wouldn't think to pick the damn things up. Like, they would try to fight you normally, so you might get like 6 kills on the AI just with one Master Ball because they just spawn and immediately try to fight you again. It's like, this isn't going to work, bro.
Yeah, they just don't, they don't understand. I mean, AI will pick up items, but they don't necessarily understand that that item is more useful.
It was literally the only way to
attacks.
Win. Yeah, in that particular stage, that was the only, like, it was worth dying to get a Master Ball because you'd get three or four kills with it.
Sure.
Oh,
sure.
It's a whole new game on custom stages.
Well, guess what, James? For the time being, humans are still smarter than robots. Let's hope it stays that way for a while.
Some humans.
It may not be that much longer that we can say that, but for now.
Yeah,
it,
but
it is still
for now. I mean, if that changes, then probably none of them would play our stages, so.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. They would look at that and go, no. They just straight up say, so you've made a stage that's all spikes and lava.
Yeah.
No, I'm not
doing
that.
Well, if robots had a choice, they would not be our friends.
True.
On Miiverse, so we wouldn't be able to share our
levels. We just get in the way, to be honest.
John, what is your new business this week?
My new business is Afterburner 2 on the eShop for 3DS, which is another Sega, I guess you could call it a 3D classics port, arcade classics.
That's what you call it, yes.
I guess, I mean, yeah. So
that's what they're called.
It's another thing in the vein of kind of Galaxy Force and Space Harrier. And, you know, just like those ones, it has a lot of kind of, you know, extra bells and whistles to the experience to kind of try to make it more like more true to the arcade, I guess, as much as you can on the handheld. This just in, Afterburner 2 is a pretty hard game. It's pretty difficult. It's not nearly.
My quarters never really lasted any time at all. Like,
no,
it was just like, whoop, okay, I'm shut down. Well, time to exit this extremely cool arcade cabinet.
Yeah,
this was back when Sega was still an arcade company, and they had ideas like, hey, what if the motorcycle game you had was actually a motorcycle? Like you rode on it that way. Mm-hmm. This was sort of like their way of reinventing what a Japanese arcade looked like by having these big, interactive, showy consoles and. Those were really expensive to make, so their strategy was to make them super fucking hard.
Yeah.
And just be huge. So when you watched people play it, because they're on this big, they're in this big, dumb, looks like a fighter plane cockpit that moves around a bit,
mm-hmm.
you'd think, wow, they're having a ton of fun. I'm going to go play that. And then it would be like, you know, it'd be versus the normal, you know, 50 yen, maybe it'd be 100 yen to play, and you might last a minute.
Yeah.
Right.
A minute and a half.
Yep.
So they're just trying to pump money out real quick to make up the cost that the arcade owner had of buying this damn thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's really fast paced and, you know, you go up in the air and you're.
Thanks, Yu Suzuki.
Yeah. It's a lot like Space Harrier where, you know, it's all in pseudo 3D and, you know, enemies are coming towards you from the horizon line. And in this case, they're all, you know, jet fighters and kind of stuff like that. And, but the thing is you get attacked. You get attacked from behind and from the front, and you get attacked by kind of like guided missiles that try to lock onto you. So you can die several different ways from enemies that fire at you from far away, enemies that come at you from behind, and then just normal enemies that are shooting at you. And you can attack them. You can shoot them with a cannon, and you can also lock onto several of them at a time and then shoot your missiles at them. But you don't really last very long. I mean, even if you kind of know what you're doing and kind of know what's coming, the problem is a lot of times you may not see the missiles that are coming at you because your plane actually blocks them. So sometimes you'll get hit, you'll get shot down, and you won't even really actually see what hit you.
What the fuck just happened?
Yeah, because you've blocked the missiles because, I mean, everything comes in on the horizon line, and if you happen to be over some of the enemies and they shoot a missile at you, you may never see that missile until it hits you. So you kind of have to keep moving around. It's really difficult.
It's so like last Afterburner game I played was Climax, and I played the 360 arcade version of it, but I also played it in the arcade a long time ago.
You loved that game, didn't you? That was the one with the insane power-ups, wasn't it?
Yeah. Like they finally started to back away from that shit, but I remember the arcade version of that game. Like it was just it's exactly it's literally just oh hey you can't see the attacks coming because your plane is. China Warrior sized on the screen. I mean, it's like the bottom third of the screen is your plane, and also fighters are coming from below you. So,
right,
good luck.
Right, but this version, this Afterburner game has you can change the difficulty. So, does that help at all?
That's the thing. I've pretty much just played it on normal. I haven't really turned it down, so I can't really tell you. But yeah, I was just kind of like, wow, this is hard as hell. But yeah, I mean, they haven't really talked too much about. I mean, I guess there's like. there's some special sort of like afterburner effect they have on here that they've added, but I haven't really been able to trigger it very well.
Oh, really? Yeah. No, I read that, like, speaking of Afterburner Climax, like, they added a mode from that game where the game slows down and lets you lock on missiles and shoot them. Have you played with that at all? Or is, like,
I've never been able to trigger
it. Turn on?
Yeah, I've never been able to trigger it. I mean, supposedly you can trigger it during gameplay, but I've never been able to trigger it. So, it's
weird.
Yeah.
My memories of Afterburner 2, I think it was the second one, they're pretty fuzzy. I was young. I want to say this was the first arcade mechanized arcade cabinet I ever saw and played. You know, because it did have the, as you guys were talking about, it had the big thing where it was on some kind of gimbal, and as you were playing, it would rock from side to side and tilt forward and back a little bit. And it never was really quite as cool as it seemed like it would be from the outside.
Right.
And the game definitely wasn't.
That was the whole goal.
The game wasn't that much fun to play, but I want to say I remember spending a lot of time upside down in the plane, and I found it very disorienting.
Yeah.
Right.
Because the entire screen would flip with you when you turn the plane that far over.
The thing about the two ads from the original, I mean, it's basically the same game. I think it's got almost all the exact same missions.
Right.
But the only difference is you have the throttle controls now.
Yeah, and the a couple of extra stages. More than a couple. There's extra stages, but it's basically the same game, yes.
Fuck.
It came out like
monsters.
It came out 8 months later.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty much an update to the original game. Like, I mean, literally, like, not even really a new game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. Like, that really gives you kind of a vision into what the arcade scene was like at that particular moment in time, especially in Japan, where the goal was really just to get new cabinets in the streets as soon as you could and make them look just flashy and stupid.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the new Sega 3D classic that everybody is pumped up about is Outrun.
Yeah, that's what I've been waiting for a long time.
I've never played Outrun. And
seriously?
Seriously. And I hear so many people just splooging all over it that I'm thinking maybe I'll have to try it.
I wouldn't say it's splooge-worthy. It's pretty cool.
No, it's not.
It seems like the soundtrack is the big draw.
I guess, but you can stream that on YouTube if you want.
Yeah, good. Outrun
the arcade game. It's a driving game. It's not.
It's
super
more
special.
Like a rad racer really than anything else. That's what it's like. I mean, that's what that game was a ripoff of. I mean, Rad Racer was a ripoff of Outrun.
Yeah, right.
Never really played Outrun either, but like Sega had some good arcade racing games, and I think the thing that I'm looking the most forward to lately is this little indie game called 90s Arcade Racer, which is, you know, aping the whole Sega racing game thing from the 90s. So it's polygons, it's not sprites like an Outrun, it's more like Sega Rally or something
Cruising
like that.
Cruising USA?
Yeah, and it looks amazing. It looks really
fun. I mean, a lot of these racing games, a lot of these Yu Suzuki racing games are like late 80s. I mean, Outrun's like 85, 86, I think. What was that first bike game? Moto something? That was like 84.
Hang on.
Yeah. Because that was the other thing about these games. They all had like action names. They were all verbs.
Yeah.
Outrun, Hang On. It was like I think one of them was called Power Drift. I mean, there was.
Yu Suzuki was kind of an
arcade genius. Like,
Well, yeah, of course he was. Yeah, I mean, if nothing else,
I mean,
that's
it's
what
a shame that he ended up being tied to the worst platforming series ever, but and it's certainly the worst mascot ever. But he was kind of a genius when it came to arcade games.
Oh yeah, he made a lot of
like
really
a marketing
good
genius,
games.
Not necessarily a great game designer, but as a marketer, as understanding what makes people put yen tokens into arcade machines.
Yep. Let's wrap up new business with mine. And, I haven't had as much time to play things this past week as I want. Like I said, I went to LA, which was fun. I got to see a lot of friends. But I did not really get to play many games during that time, and it sucked up the whole weekend. I did finish Bionic Commando Elite Forces, and I won't really talk about it except to say, I think people should play that game. It might be my favorite Bionic Commando. It is really, really good. And it's on your 3DS now. It's super convenient. I also finished Shadow of Mordor, which I have nothing to say about it. It is very generic. It's really good. It's really polished. It's often fun. I don't think I like it nearly as much as a lot of other people do.
Yeah, so it's not the game of the forever?
Won some Game of the Year awards because it's just really solid and it doesn't have any major flaws. And so if you stack it up to other things that were maybe more ambitious but a little messier, then maybe it was easier. Like with Giant Bomb, it felt like it was the easiest thing to build consensus around, even though it wasn't necessarily anyone's favorite game.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I feel about it. I mean, it's fun. It's really solid, but it's – I also feel like I've had quite enough Batman combat. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I just don't really need to play any more Batman combat.
Well, it's good for you that the next Batman game's coming out soon. Soonish.
Yeah. Arkham Knight, buddy.
I'm going to have to see some evolution there. Although that game interests me for other reasons. That game has actual exploration, which Shadow of Mordor is basically just fighting. It's almost a Musou game. I mean, it is running around and killing thousands of orcs. That's about all there is to it. It's well done, but it's just it's not very interesting, really. Anyway, the game that I thought might be the most interesting for new business this week is a little game called Resident Evil, which just came out, an HD remake of the GameCube FMV remake was just released on
Are you sure it's not an Ace Combat game?
Well, I think it makes sense because, you know,
remake. It's Capcom. Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Exactly. Well, the GameCube remake was basically only available on GameCube. And, you know, because that game went from the original Resident Evil in 96 was pre-rendered CG backgrounds. And with the GameCube remake, they turned those into much higher resolution FMV backgrounds. So they're still static. I mean, you can't go over and like tip over things. I mean, like if there's a box that you can push around, you can tell that it's not attached to the background. It very clearly looks like it's made of polygons, whereas everything else looks super clean.
It looks like cheap cartoons where you can see the stuff that's going to move ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. But those backgrounds looked frigging incredible, and they still do because they've cleaned them up, they've made them widescreen, they're higher resolution now. And, you know, the nice thing about this HD remake, which is weirdly to me not on Wii U, I guess Capcom just couldn't be bothered. But I mean, certainly I can't see anything here that shouldn't be able to run on Wii U, which is obviously an HD system. And this is a remake of an older game, so it seems unlikely to me that this would be a technical problem to get it running. I have to imagine they just don't really think enough people would buy it, and that's very sad considering it's a remake of a GameCube game. But anyway, so I'm playing it on PS4. I would love for this to come to Wii U later because I'm sure there are, you know, plenty of our listeners at least would be interested. But game looks damn fine. And with the HD, you know, they've given a few passes to the characters and the foreground elements, so they don't stick out as much from the backgrounds in this version. And I think that's a good thing. You know, I think that helps the game. So I'm really enjoying the atmosphere of it. And this game, this series has always had amazing sound design. And this is the first time I'm playing a Resident Evil game, or really pretty much any survival horror game that I can think of, since I got a sound bar and a subwoofer and surround speakers and, you know, like an actual nice sound system for my TV. And the sound design is really spectacular. I mean, there's no doubt. And I think that's always been the case, but I can appreciate it more on my new gear for sure. I don't know how much work they did to spruce it up from the GameCube version, but it sounds really great. It's very creepy. The music is nice. All the zombie sounds and stuff like that are really well done. And they did re-record the voice acting. I think this was done back on GameCube. The writing is still terrible, and some of the line deliveries are still pretty awkward, especially Wesker, the cadence to his sentences are really strange. Sometimes he'll say stuff like, Jill, no. That's how he tells Jill, no, don't do that. He says, Jill, no.
I think actually, you know, this came out on PC, right? This particular version of it?
Yeah. It's on PC, Xbox One. I think it's even on stuff like PS3, maybe.
Yeah, because somebody, maybe. I think, somebody modded the PC version of it to actually have to use the voice files from the original game.
Sure. That should be a menu option, quite frankly.
It should be, yeah.
I don't know
totally
why
agree.
It isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the old voice acting is hilariously bad and
horrible.
Very lovable for just how terrible it is. I mean, the update is still bad, but it's not so distracting anymore. Mm-hmm. It jives a little better with the quality of the visuals and everything else. They fix the controls. I mean, there's an option. You can play with the old tank controls if you want to, but by default, you move around in a little more natural way where the character just kind of points in the direction that you move the stick. And it's more like Eternal Darkness. Things get a little weird when the camera angle changes, which happens pretty frequently in this game. Right. But, I still think I prefer it this way. And I'm glad the tank stuff is there for purists, but I never really cared for that stuff. The only problem is it's Resident Evil. I mean, it is a clunky game. You could argue intentionally or by design. You could argue that the clunkiness makes it scarier. I could also argue the clunkiness makes it clunky and sometimes not fun to play. I mean, sometimes it is fun. A lot of things about it, I think, are not great. The inventory management is overbearing just because your inventory is so small and you find so many items and you're just kind of constantly going in there and trying to make room or figuring out what you need and don't need. It's a remake. It's pretty faithful to the original. They could have updated the stuff and they chose not to, and I understand why. It reminds me of why I was never a huge Resident Evil fan in the first place. I mean, I certainly think 2 is a big improvement. I think 4 is 1,000 times better than any of the previous Resident Evils. And if you've only played 4 and maybe 5, going back to this one might be a bit of a shock. But it was very, very popular in its day. And I think for good reason. I mean, the production values really hold up nicely. And Capcom, although we might make fun of them for this, I think Capcom has been smart to try to update this game to keep it modern with the production values of the era as time marches forward, because that's really what made it appealing in the first place. And it's still appealing for that reason. I mean, I think this version of the game is interesting, and it's something I want to keep going back to because I want to see those backgrounds. They are so beautiful and the sound design is so great. I want to see that stuff. I want to hear that stuff. And so for me, you know, I might be putting up with the gameplay to some extent, but also I've seen almost this entire, I almost beat this game on PlayStation. I think I rented it and got very close to the end. So I'm not overly anxious about what's going to jump around the corner or what's going to happen in the story. I mean, I kind of know the basic outline of it, and I'm just trying to enjoy it and play through and, you know, solve all the goofy block puzzles and stuff.
Well, yeah, I don't think the original had the crimson heads though.
No, that was added for GameCube. No, I'm not that far. I only have the sword key right now, so I've still got a ways to go. But the reason I wanted to get this is because I never played it on GameCube. Right. And I thought about it 100 times, and I just never got around to it. And I was like, oh, okay, well, now I've waited 10 years, more than that, probably 12 years since the GameCube remake.
Yeah.
So now I have an excuse, and it's cheaper. You know, I had a coupon over the weekend, and blah, yeah, you know, whatever. It was fairly easy to justify this time. And I just wanted to see it, and I'm glad I saw it.
It's interesting. It reminds me a bit of Monster Hunter in the sense that it's a really popular game. Almost in spite of itself. In spite of its inherent flaws.
I would say, I mean, I can't go back to these games. And I went and played Zero roughly pretty soon after it came out, which was GameCube exclusive. I think it still is.
Yeah, and made with the same level of production value as the remake.
And at some point, at some point playing Zero fairly early, I decided, oh god, this is actually terrible, and I just stopped playing.
Yeah, but that's a common opinion even amongst Resident Evil fans, though. Like,
but it's one of the less.
It's not the game. It's nothing special about the game, though. It was just how that game plays. I realized, like, wait, this just feels real bad.
Yeah, this is archaic. Well,
because it's a prequel and it's built on the remake engine, Zero doesn't have some of the more modern developments of even like RE2 and 3 necessarily. I mean, I think it is designed more in the vein of the first game, which they had just done a remake of on the same
system.
It's like,
hey, every enemy's just slightly off screen.
Yeah.
Try shooting.
By the way, I played a demo of Resident Evil Zero on N64.
God.
Yeah, back at E3 2000. They showed it one
time.
That
game's never been ported to anything, has it?
There might have been a Wii port. Yeah, you could get it on Wii. like full price, you know, $50 port of Resident Evil Zero in 2008 or whenever it was. Yeah, but I don't know if it's out on any other systems. But yeah, I think RE fans don't like it because of the story, mostly.
The story, but I think that the level design or whatever was also not as good. Like, the enemies were more obnoxious, the leeches are on a train.
Yeah, there's right. that train. I mean, the fact it's on a train, hey, it's on a long, narrow thing, and the camera's always pointed so you can't see anything.
Right.
Thanks, game.
So I do think that, you know, playing Zero, saying, oh, this doesn't hold up at all, is like playing, I don't know, like Mario less levels and thinking, well, Mario doesn't work.
I disagree, though, because ultimately all Zero does is it puts the flaws of that gameplay into sharper contrast.
It doesn't
invent those flaws. Those flaws still exist.
Sure, but if a game is designed to accommodate the flaws
but,
better.
But that's the problem. Resident Evil isn't designed to accommodate this.
I don't
flaws.
Know. I think that going back to remake is a better experience than playing Zero.
Well,
that's maybe saying.
But sure. I'm not. My point is, it doesn't feel like they ever accommodated. Hey, the camera's fixed. It's going to put you in a weird place. The tank controls are here. It doesn't feel like in the levels like, oh, we thought about this.
No. But anyway.
Yeah, and again, Resident Evil Zero had a tortured development process because it did jump from. I mean, you can imagine the N64 version, completely different than the GameCube game. The GameCube game is running FMV backgrounds. N64 had, you know, crazy ass compressed, pre-rendered static stuff that was made just for that game that they never finished. So they had to throw away virtually everything when they remade that game for GameCube. And there's no telling what that process was
and
like.
And I will say, right. I've played Resident Evil 2 on the N64, which is a weird game in and of itself because I rented that
back in the day as well.
How they put the videos and stuff in and how they ended up looking is super strange. But the control decisions they had to make to accommodate that thing to a one-stick system are weird. Now, granted, Resident Evil came out with no sticks.
Yeah, the first one was
and that plays like butt.
Yeah,
however,
it does.
The N64 one where they're like, "Hey, we've got one stick, let's use it," and then you try to play it like, "Whoa, hey guys, this is weird."
They did some of the direct control stuff but back then. You know, it was a long time
really
ago.
They hadn't really figured it out. Yeah,
no, right. and they I think hadn't it, figured it out at all.
Well, also, I think that I think the N64 version of RE2 was outsourced to Angel Studios, which
was
at the time was owned by Nintendo. Partially.
They were
Nintendo's second party. They made
Ken Griffey baseball games. Yeah,
yep. They made Ken Griffey, and I think they made Excitebike. No, that was Left Field.
No, they made, but I want to say they made the Kobe Bryant game that came out with GameCube.
That was Left Field.
Yeah, Left Field
was
did
it Left
Kobe
Field?
Bryant and
yep. okay.
Excitebike 64.
Angel definitely did all the Griffey games, though.
Yeah, they did Griffey and a couple other things, and then, yeah, they did RE2 on N64. So, yeah, you know.
They were obviously well-prepared.
That's a weird historical relic. If you ever find a copy of RE2 for N64, it's almost up there with like StarCraft 64, something that probably shouldn't
exist.
Which
I own both of those. I own both those games.
Yeah.
Angel is actually now Rockstar San Diego, interestingly enough.
Yes, they are. Yes.
Really?
Very interesting. Yep.
So
they did Midnight Club.
Red Dead Redemption.
Red Dead, Smuggler's Run, Midtown Madness, et cetera, et cetera.
But Red Dead Redemption, most important.
Yeah, that's their main thing.
That would, at this point, correct. That would be the game they're most famous for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, interesting experience going back to Resident Evil. I only played maybe a couple hours of it last night, but I intend to go back and dig deeper into it. Like I said, it's not my favorite series, and the only game in Resident Evil that I really love is 4. But this one, I've always been super curious about. I'm glad I can go try it again now. But it really should come out on Wii U. That's effed up. All right, well, we're going to take a break now. When we come back, we do have some listener mail, so stick around.
It's now playing, a sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com. It's now playing. We already had an intro, so fuck that. I forgot we have an intro. John, I forgot we have an intro.
Does not surprise me, James.
We have, and I recorded it. We have an intro. I recorded. You just heard it. Anyway, first up this week, we have a review from Don Koopman for Wii U. And again, it's not published by Nintendo. We're on a trend here. Called Rockin' Racing Off-Road. Don Kusoge Koopman is back with another surefire 9 out of 10 game. Oh wait, this is reality. Once again, Don is the way of breaking upon the rocks of hot garbage as he takes a look at another winner that makes even him ask, what happened here? I think we're all asking the same thing, Don. Week after miserable week. Also this week, we have a feature. What to expect on Nintendo platforms in the year of our Lord 2015. The staff takes a look at what games Nintendo fans have to look forward to this year, compiled onto one big article and broken out by platform for your reading enjoyment. Did you forget that Devil's Third and Quality of Life were things? We did too! Also note that I greased some palms in order to get them to add an Ace Combat game. Money well spent.
You know, James, I think if I think you'd have an easier time reading the script if I actually put it in code format.
It's true. I could just have something read it for me, and then I could just sit there and pretend. Mm-hmm. Move my lips in sequence with it.
And on that depressing note, we have a feature. Amiibo guides for Codename Steam, the Super Mario series, and the Smash Brothers series. I'm contractually obligated to tell you about these guides.
It's true.
I know they're popular with the kids. We list Amiibos and what games they're compatible with. Now, excuse me, I have to have a shower.
I need a scarf to keep myself warm.
And we also have a review of Box Boy for 3DS by Don Koopman. Don Kusuke Koopman is back with another surefire 9 out of 10 game.
John.
What?
This actually is a 9 out of 10 game.
What? Seriously?
So saith Don Koopman.
Wow, I mean, you kidding me? What the hell happened here? I mean, did the post office make a mistake and send him the wrong game? Don has to be wrong. Maybe it's... I mean, is it a 0.9 out of 10? That's the only answer here. I got nothing.
It's a negative 9 out of 10.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay, John. Whew. All this and more reality-shattering reviews available to you on a website that we refer to as NintendoWorldReport.com. There you can also find previews, features, and Amiibo. Not Marth Amiibos.
Not the Amiibo. Just
Amiibo in general, but not, I mean, not Marth in specific.
Don't go there for Amiibo.
You know what? Just make this site AmiiboWorldReport.com. Let's just do it.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It is time for listener mail, and as always, the address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. You could also tweet listener mail questions to us. They'll have to be short, but that might even help them get picked. And our Twitter, of course, is @rfnpodcast. So, Guillaume is going to read the first letter this week. By the way, none of these are short.
Nope. So, JR writes... I have a prediction, which leads me to a question. As difficult as it would be considering how lame the current loyalty program is, I predict the new one will be a disappointment. The revamp will be focused mainly on fixing issues with the surveys and making sure people do them immediately and not save them up for years to get platinum prizes. The prizes, if any, will be limited to digital downloads, with the only exclusive ones being demo codes like they've been doing recently. Which leads me to this predicament. Should I buy everything I've been putting off to try and get that final lame platinum prize, or hold off to get the first lame prize of the new program? Do you think this prediction is way off? Will these concerns affect your purchasing decisions in the coming months?
Club Nintendo should never affect your purchasing decisions.
I disagree.
I agree with that.
It should motivate all of your purchasing decisions.
I think, for first things first, I think surveys are gone. They're not coming back.
Well, I can't imagine they ever gleaned much out of them.
No, they're not effective. I mean, people just lie on them anyways, or they just troll. I mean, that's what I was doing. I was basically trolling.
At some point, if I had like a review game of just like some god awful piece of DSI, where I would just dump the whole text of the review and then be like, I'm done.
For every game I ever bought on VC, it was like, tell us what you think of the VC service. I'm like, oh, well, let me tell you what I think of Virtual Console. You have abandoned it. Da, da, da. It sucks. Da, 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 da.
Sometimes I get pretty real on the surveys.
So. I can't imagine they actually read
it. Check
them.
Out my podcast, bro. Yeah. I'll tell you all you want.
No, I would like podcast too. I'd be like,
I got 6 years worth of survey answers for you right here. Listen to them in your car.
I mean, like, when I was bored, I would get there and just do, like, 20 surveys and just write real random shit in them. Like, I would...
Yeah. Mm.
Like, I wrote poetry. If someone is reading this, this is my poem to you. I mean, there's no way they got anything out of this.
Right. Yeah. So, there's probably a good chance that they're going to tie it up to, like, your account somehow. Like, your Nintendo ID.
Yeah. You know,
you might rate games directly on the machine like you do now. And maybe that's going to be the future of Club Nintendo.
Right.
I don't know.
Maybe they incentivize you to actually rate the games that you've played in the platforms where they directly aggregate those ratings and use them to feed suggestions to people in the marketplace. That seems like a really good strategy. Because, I don't think they ever got that much out of the surveys. And they were probably getting very similar surveys from the same people over and over again, because they're, you know, the people who cared about things like platinum status were a very small group. And, I mean, ultimately the reason that Club Nintendo is shutting down is got to be that Nintendo just wasn't getting the value out of it for how much trouble it was to keep it going.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And even for their customers. You've seen over time.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen over time that they've drifted away from physical prizes, and they're doing kind of one last gasp on them, I guess. But it's been almost all digital stuff for a while now. Even, you know, down to the gold and platinum rewards last year were all digital stuff, which I'm fine with. But obviously, some people griped about that just because they had gotten used to something. So doing a clean break and starting with something brand new really gives Nintendo carte blanche to, you know, establish the ground rules early, and the ground rules will be: whatever reward you get out of this will be, you know, digital or at least economic in nature. I mean, it will be a coupon or something.
We're not bothering with shipping stuff out to you anymore. We're just not. Yeah. We're dumping that entire exercise.
But think about this. I mean, this makes it much easier for them to do something like credit your account. Mm-hmm. Because you don't have a logistics system anymore. Yeah.
Especially like when you consider the number of countries that they were doing this in, like in North America, I think, I'm not sure if they were shipping to Mexico, but they were definitely shipping to Canada and like in Europe, like don't even mention it.
Well, in Europe, because of EU stuff, it's not so bad. In Canada, US isn't too bad shipping. But yeah, I mean, the biggest thing here is just that there's obviously the cost of postage, and that's not non-negligible, but there's the cost of having a logistics department.
Exactly.
Making these things in relatively small numbers is a big deal.
Yeah. Or having someone on contract to do that for you. You don't have to do that anymore. So you can just cut that line item out.
And over time, the surveys become less and less valuable to your company, you know, because you're getting a lot of the same types of answers over time.
Even if the surveys had good information on them, ultimately they're for finished products.
Yeah. Also, you have to pay someone to actually read those surveys and try to get something out of it, and that costs money too.
Or you buy a software solution to do that.
Well, maybe.
Big data.
Well, yeah, but I mean, why would you even bother? I mean,
it's all pros though. I mean, you're pulling keywords maybe, but.
Yeah,
it's just a huge hassle, and I can't imagine they were getting that much out of it. And yet the year 2015, you know, you're asking people to type in their age and stuff like that. There's better ways to do it and ways for them to reward customers in ways that encourage further purchases, which, you know, little plastic statues really don't.
bad timing on that statement.
Well, yeah, you know. and Hanafuda cards don't really encourage people to buy more video games, you know, is maybe a better example.
Yep.
But also they can just do things with much lower overhead. But, you know, the main question here from JR was, you know, should you put off trying to fill out those surveys to get the first lame prize of the new program? That won't work. There's no, there's no point to waiting, because the games that you've got surveys outstanding for right now, those surveys will go away and you won't get anything for it.
Right.
If you wait.
I think that maybe he was asking, like, should I buy games now or wait later? But definitely don't go and rush out and pay full price for games that you were not planning on playing right now just for Club Nintendo. That doesn't make any sense.
Do it.
Even I don't do that.
Do it. You say it makes no sense, but does it make sense to your heart?
I don't know. Unless it's Skyrim. Buy as many copies of Skyrim as you possibly can. And Elder Scrolls Oblivion. Buy as many of those
as you
can.
John, does it come with a scarf? That's a question.
I wish Oblivion did. I would buy it again.
Being that it is a loyalty program, you know, a lot of loyalty programs don't require you to do any surveys or ratings at all. They just require you to be a member and buy things and, you know, maybe take a newsletter every now and then. But Nintendo, I'm not saying they will, but they certainly could go, you know, connect to your Nintendo Network account and reward people retroactively, a platinum status or whatever equivalent, if there is one, they could actually reward that retroactively to people just based on your purchase history
from the
eShop.
So
buying it now might not even necessarily penalize you for down the road.
I mean, they won't, because they want you to start over again. But my guess is, I mean, this is, we're going to lay out what the plan architecture is most likely. My guess is they have two objectives. One is to incentivize, one is to cut the overhead of having physical ass shit to send.
Yeah, that's a big cost.
And the other part of that overhead to cut is to cut this redundant system that they're having to feed back data into, which was the Club Nintendo system, which is a relic of an earlier era.
Yeah. So
they can get rid of all of this weight and just start fresh. And the other one is, and this is more of a strategic objective, but they've done a lot of things to try to push, is to get people to use the eShop. I mean, that's what they want. And their last promotion to do that, the Wii U
Digital Deluxe program.
has now expired, and
system is going to look a lot more like Digital Deluxe.
Yeah, the timing
than
of that
Club
expiring
Nintendo.
And this announcement is not coincidence.
No, and by the way, Digital Deluxe program was awesome. And I used it a ton, and I got a ton of credits back. I mean, several games on my Wii U right now were bought entirely with credit from
Digital
Deluxe program.
Now, I would not expect this to be as generous as a Digital Deluxe program.
Maybe not, but it'll apply across both of their platforms.
Yeah,
more credit for things
than
you could
before. My guess is
it
will also give you credit for retail purchases, but they're only going to get digital credit to go buy into their digital store.
Exactly. So over time, they gradually convert more and more people into eShop users, because even if you buy retail stuff, your rewards will be
you have to include the retail stuff based to get those people to go into the eShop.
They'd be stupid to exclude, you know. So yeah, I think a big part of the Digital Deluxe program, the biggest problem was that they didn't really advertise it very well
at all. I mean, effectively, they mentioned it during press conferences, but besides that, it was just like, yeah, here's this thing we've got.
Yeah, and you know, they didn't even really remind people to go cash in their credits. They kind of left that to people like us to go be like, hey, you might not even realize it, but you probably have some credits built up.
You probably still do. You can still cash them in.
You can, and ddp.nintendo.com. And that was yet another account that you had to sign into, by the way.
It was.
You had to have a username and password for that, which
then
is insane.
Then you linked it to your it was your Nintendo
account.
It was your Nintendo account.
Yeah. Nintendo ID.
Oh, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. My bad.
Yep.
But different than Club Nintendo for sure.
Yes.
And it's really in Nintendo's interest for you to cash in those credits from DDP, because again, it sends you into the eShop where you might buy other things, especially if you're someone who doesn't normally go to the eShop.
But in this case, if this is how this thing ends up going, you know, they've unified the eShop credit across two platforms, which was a big deal. It's a big deal towards moving towards this solution. They've now applied Nintendo Network accounts directly to the 3DS. Again, that's a big deal, because now that means the two systems are effectively linked. Yeah. They've got Miiverse on both systems, which you might say that's not a big deal, but they could use that for marketing, marketing this program. But more pressingly, because you now have a unified wallet, they can just dump credits directly into the wallet.
Yep.
And they can just say, hey, you've got credits. Go to the eShop now and claim them. And you go to the eShop and you say, have a little icon, claim your eShop credit. Bam. Oh, look, here's some games you could buy with it, all of them conveniently costing more than the value of the credit you just put in.
Ultimately, it's really more like Sony has right now.
Right.
I mean,
and also
some
you think that more and more things, more and more eShop games you can actually purchase online, right? Like, do you receive a code when you do that, or is it actually tied to your Nintendo ID?
It's tied to your Nintendo ID.
It is tied
to
your Nintendo ID.
Yes, that's
true.
They announced
that. They announced that alongside it, the proliferation of their ability to buy on other platforms. You could buy on the website for a little while now, but now I think you're talking about like you can do it on mobile. Did they explicitly say mobile app?
I don't know.
Or was it
implicit?
I
mean, you could use your mobile browser to buy
things
on the eShop.
Yeah, but they did a call out.
And you can preload. You can preload.
Right.
You're going to be able to preload Kirby and one other Wii U game.
Yeah.
Right. So to me, like, it just sounds like they can just, ideally, they should just group that all together. That should all be one system.
I would think that's their plan. You can use your Nintendo Network to get to anything Nintendo related on PC, including the amazing, and I say, I'm not being ironic here, the amazing Miiverse on PC where you can just steal all those awesome pictures that people have put up of their drawing and terrible Miiverse posts. But, I mean, they could just make a singular, and they'd be dumb if they don't, just make a kind of a singular landing page for your Nintendo Network stuff on PC and say, hey, do you want to buy stuff? How about you buy stuff? Let's go buy stuff.
Yeah, you know, I know a lot of people were kind of grumbling about the end of Club Nintendo and concerned about what might replace it. And you might say I'm overly optimistic here, but my stance on it is I thought we all wanted Nintendo to go to a single unified account. And that's exactly – this is a step on that path. That's exactly what we're talking about
I do think they will occasionally still do something physical, but just not as big as they're doing now. It'd be probably for specific games or
whatever.
Yeah. It'll be like
honestly, the way they could do it is send that stuff out to your local GameStop and go and show a code on your phone that says, hey, I can pick this up.
Yeah, but you could –
because then again, that helps with their retail situation because now you're in the store. Maybe you'll buy something. It helps their distribution because they already have to send trucks out to these stores anyway rather than relying on the postal service or something like that.
I mean, I look back to – I want to say it was the Phantom Hourglass, where they would mail you the feather stylus if you registered that game online.
Yeah.
Like, they may still do some one-offs like that. But
I received a children's watch for getting F-Zero Climax. It was amazing.
That's accurate.
I don't know what happened to it.
That's what you should get for buying F-Zero Climax. No adult would buy this anime-inspired F-Zero game.
Yeah, I don't think Americans got it. It was a Nintendo of Canada exclusive on Club Nintendo.
Oh, God.
I'm so sorry you bought F-Zero Climax.
It was not very good.
That's an amazing those two F-Zero anime games are amazing. Like
GP Legend never came out outside of Japan.
It's their existence. Their
we
existence
should all be thankful for that.
That's just it. They are the Sonic Boom of the F-Zero franchise. Like they exist.
Yeah,
they exist as promotion for a TV show,
right?
About a video game series.
That's unfortunately kind of accurate comparison.
But they're not. They're not. They're not just awful, terrible garbage.
Regardless, I think this is a good thing. I know some people have wondered if Nintendo might go the way of PlayStation Plus, but I mean, keep in mind, PlayStation Plus isn't really a loyalty program.
It is
wrapped up in PlayStation Plus, but PlayStation Plus is primarily a subscription service where you pay a monthly fee or maybe a bundled flat fee, but you're paying to get games and other stuff. And it's, you know, the thing is, Sony also does loyalty programs that aren't related to PlayStation Plus. They'll do a sale like through the month of December. If you spend at least $100, you'll get $10 credit back in January. They do stuff or, you know, they release, you know, their summer harvest or whatever the hell they call it of, you know.
That's a fucking awful name.
Whatever. They release like four indie games, you know, one week at a time. And if you buy at least two of them, you get $5 back. And if you buy three, you get $10. You know, they do that, those kind of promotions. Those are loyalty programs. And you don't have to be a PlayStation Plus member.
Yeah, but those aren't.
To get those, you just get discounts if you're a Plus member.
Those are like loyalty flashing pans versus a long-standing, consistent loyalty program.
Yes, true. This is more like, you know, being a Best Buy member or a Kmart member.
Super productive, by the way.
Something like that. You know, it's much more along those lines. And I think DDP is really the ultimate
Yeah, I mean the fact
I think we should look forward to something maybe a little more complicated than Digital Deluxe Program, but along those lines.
The expiration of that, as well as the Mewtwo offer, seemingly just before this thing got announced. I mean, it's not a coincidence.
And the soundtrack, don't forget.
And the sound, the soundtrack comes with the Mewtwo offer, effectively. Like that's you can download the soundtrack to Smash Brothers right now. It's on the internet. You can go find it.
Yeah, but it's like 100 gigabytes.
It's fucking enormous.
Yeah, so
it's
so stupid
how big that soundtrack is.
I just found out I have $15 worth of down.
There you go, John.
eShop credit. Thanks,
John.
To,
you should go buy.
Beautiful.
Thanks to Sonic Boom. DDP. I'm not going to buy anything you suggest, James, ever.
You should go buy Sonic Boom, John, right now. I will say, so the one other contrast here between something like Plus, besides the fact the subscription service, is that Nintendo is dealing with the reality that they create, that they don't view their games as depreciating in value after 6 months.
Yeah.
So they're not going to be willing to give you a game if you sign on this week and grab it. Like, that's – no, because they still want to charge you $60 for that game. So, I mean, it seems to me like this is just going to be a straight-up cash-for-cash system. But there may be something like you buy this game and we'll give you this other virtual console game to go with it or something weird like that.
On occasion, yeah. And then I can also see, you know, in the past, they've done some minor exclusive content for Club Nintendo people. So,
well, like Mewtwo, Doc Lewis Punch Out is a big one.
Yes, exactly. So I could see them, you know, rather than giving away games for free, which, as you said, they see that as reducing those games' value. I think the reason that they do all these, you know, you can pay coins to get WiiWare games and virtual console stuff is because that's kind of the only thing left for them to do on Club Nintendo. That's like the best, cheapest thing for them to offer. But I think they would rather put money in your account because then you might go spend more than you actually have in your account. So that works out better for them and it gives you more flexibility. But I could still see them doing exclusive DLC, maybe exclusive little mini games, stuff like that. That seems more likely than them just giving away Game and Wario. I mean, them giving away Game and Wario was really mostly just an admission that game sold incredibly poorly,
right.
and they wanted to get some value out of it.
And as near as I can tell, nothing has ever gone up for coins that had a retail release, because again,
right.
There's no physical copies to depreciate their value. There's no used units out there that can be bought in lieu of. So
right.
There's no second channel of which the value has been decreasing. The Doc Lewis one's interesting because there's never been another way to get that game.
Yeah,
ever.
Right.
And you're not missing much though.
No. But they went and made it.
Yeah.
And then literally there is no way to get it.
They did Grill Off with Ultra Hand.
Yep.
Which is always available for coins on the Club Nintendo.
You can still get that one.
The Doc Lewis one, like, I'm almost surprised they haven't released it though.
It'll probably be, if they make another Punch Out game, it'll probably be like a unlockable or something.
Yeah,
but I would think.
Why not just sell it on the eShop though?
Well, James, I mean, I don't know.
Well, yes, you can.
People would buy it.
You'd have to go to the Wii Shop channel to get it.
It would be so unsavory, but I wouldn't put it past them with Amiibos.
I mean, fighting. I mean, if it's $5, whatever. I mean, fighting. If you buy
an Amiibo, we'll throw in. Doc.
I never got to get my shit wrecked by Donkey Kong. Mm-hmm. I know that it's super impossible to beat him though.
Yeah, he's worse than Mike Tyson. Okay, well let's move on to the next email, and James is going to read that one.
Shad from Tennessee writes, "Back in November, Neil wrote an article on the site about finding comfort in games in the wake of death, wake of a death. That article couldn't have been more timely. During that time, my coping mechanism became caring for my wife, but when she would fall asleep, I didn't know what to do with myself, so I would bury myself in Ocarina of Time 3D. Playing one of my most favorite games was the only thing that could help me cope when my wife didn't need me. Have you guys ever sought comfort in a game in the face of loss or tragedy? Is there any specific game you go to, or do you just dive even deeper into whatever game you happen to be playing at that time? If not games, what do you like to turn to?"
Well, first off, yeah, we cut some of the details out of Chad's email because they were too sad for me to deal with having on here. But I do want to say I'm really sorry for what happened to you guys, and I appreciate your email a lot. you know, and the blog post that he's referring to with Neil is pretty rough too. Neil's grandfather passed away, yeah. And he wrote a nice, very nice article about how games kind of helped him through it. But I figured this is a pretty universal experience. You know, the mm-hmm. details are always different and personal and unique, but a lot of us have been through these times, and I thought it was worth bringing up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if any of you guys here have had a parent die, but my father died in 2008. He died of cancer. And so that was just a huge, huge deal. I can't remember specifically if there were any games I turned to, but I think that it would have been any, for me personally, it would have been kind of any game that would have been coming out at the time. Just sort of the, like having something to look forward to, you know?
The new and now?
Kind of. Not necessarily new, but having something, knowing that something positive was on the horizon that was coming out. Something that could take your mind off of the present. You know, things were going on in the present. You would say, hey, well, you know, it's like just to kind of take your mind off it. Oh, well, you know, this game is coming out this month or just something like that. Like you kind of like cling to stuff like that. So
get through this to that, essentially.
Exactly. You're kind of hopping from point A to point B, just kind of trying to stay sane sort of thing. So for me personally, like there's no game that I really particularly, that whole kind of thing is kind of a blur to me now. Just because, you know, like so much was going on and it was so touch and go. It's like, you know, the cancer, it's like, you know, he was operated on and then maybe the cancer went away. Well, I don't know because, well, he'll get checked again in a month. And, you know, there's all that kind of stuff. It's like a whole, it's really grueling. So it had, and the whole thing unfolded over like the course of probably a year and a half. So just, you know, that amount of time, it kind of kept me going. You know what I mean? So I think kind of it's therapeutic.
We were doing the show then, weren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Or was it right before?
Yeah, I didn't.
Was it 2000? Yeah, maybe no. It was August 2007. My bad.
Okay. I was like, yeah. I was trying to think back.
Yeah,
we would have been.
Yeah.
Just before.
I was going through the same process, James. I was like, man, I didn't even realize this was going on, and we were doing the show every week. But,
yeah. Yeah, that was okay. 2007. Yeah, yeah,
I was like, I already busted on John at that point? Jeez.
No.
That was before the three of us at least were doing it. Long before Guillaume. But
yeah,
that's horrific.
Yeah, yeah. I've
not had to deal with that.
Yeah, but. I mean, I'm trying to think of what was actually out at that time, but I mean,
'07. That was pretty close to a console generation change.
Yeah.
So it would have been a lot of the launch and second wave stuff for PS3, Wii, and then some of the second and third wave stuff for 360.
Yeah.
Well, and DS. I mean, I think especially when you're going through really difficult circumstances, I tend to end up playing handhelds a lot more, especially if I'm traveling.
Sure.
Or, right. You know, so the only one I could really think of was I remember when my grandmother died a few years ago, and I think I was already playing it. But I remember diving pretty deep into Picross 3D because that is a game that really, it's like, it's very mentally occupying and yet kind of not at the same time. I mean, it's a zone out game. Mm-hmm. So like you can play it and it's engaging enough that you can't really think about other things while you play it, but it's not so taxing that it exhausts you. You know, so I could play for really long periods of time and really just kind of veg out. And a lot of times I would listen to podcasts or music while I played it. But I couldn't really like emotionally process and play that game at the same time. And I remember even playing that game on the plane when I was flying back to Alabama, to like go to her funeral. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely one that kind of worked for me.
Yeah.
And also that game feels a little bit like work. You know, it's almost like doing homework because you're just solving these endless stream of puzzles.
Kinda, yeah.
I mean, it's like doing a crossword or something. You know, like it's like fun homework. You know,
right. It's brain taxing.
Yeah, and that's like when I'm going through some like really dark stuff. That's usually what I tend to gravitate. Like I want to stay busy, but I'm kind of physically exhausted. Like I try to do some physical stuff, but it's hard for me to like stay on my feet and like really be active and kind of go out and have the energy to go do a lot of stuff. So a lot of times I try to find things that will sort of keep my mind busy while Because I tend to like need some time to sort of deal with things piece by piece and not all at once. And that's kind of how I get through stuff like that. You know, with the flood, it was the same way.
Oh, that's true.
That was not nearly as bad as a family member passing away, but it was pretty traumatic. And, you know, also I didn't really have a place to like set up a TV or consoles for a while. So, having handheld stuff was really good for that.
Yeah. Cause you had stepped out for about a month. So by the time we got back in communication with you for my 1 month hegemony over the show, by the time you were back, you'd kind of adopted the sort of, I wouldn't say gallows humor about the whole thing, but you'd become a little bit more reverent about it from you know, the emails we were getting. So I don't think we had that kind of insight as to how you were dealing with it. Cause we got the email where you told us, and then we got maybe one or two status updates. But I mean, by the time you came back, it was kind of, you were kind of already moving beyond.
Yeah, it was a weird situation too, because I, like the week after the flood, I went to Europe because I'd had a trip planned.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. About a year, you know, and the flood happened right before that. And so I just decided, well, I've already paid for it. I might as well go. And that trip was really good for me. And, you know, this isn't really something I can recommend to people because it's just the kind of thing you can't really plan on doing right after something bad happens. But being able to go to a foreign country or multiple foreign countries and just be completely out of my zone and also just totally removed from my normal life, it gave me so much distance from the bad stuff that by the time – and the other thing is like when you're traveling to that degree, when you come back to your normal life, it feels like you've been gone a really long time because your head is just full of all these exotic experiences. And to me, by the time I came back, I'd been gone for a week and it felt like a month. And that really helped me kind of deal with that stuff because it seemed far removed from me. Mm-hmm. So that was just a pure circumstance that things kind of worked out that way, but it actually helped me deal with the emotions of the flood quite a bit.
I mean, I was quite a bit young. I mean, I've thankfully not had to deal with, you know, I've only dealt with a couple deaths in my life. But thankfully the it's not been anything, you know, hugely traumatic at the moment. But when I was quite a bit younger, I had both of my grandfathers have spent significant time in the hospital in really bad shape. One of them had it happen when they were in New Hampshire visiting my French Canadian grandmother's family, which was super awesome because that meant they were in a part of New Hampshire, and this was early to mid 90s where it was like, hey, I would like to call them. Oh, they still use telegrams. Great. That's perfect. like way up in the part of New Hampshire where nobody lives. Like just way up there.
James, I didn't realize you were blood brothers with Guillaume.
We got the hell out of France roughly the time where if you had any money, you should get the hell out of France. So we got there a little bit later. Let's put it that way. But the more recent, and I say more recent because it was still GBA era, I had a grandfather who had a herniated disc that went in to do operation, it got sepsis, and then they had to put him into a medically induced coma for weeks. Mm-hmm. Literally weeks. I mean, it was a tremendously taxing experience for everybody involved.
And it's all touch and go, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The whole time.
You have no idea
The mental state of my grandmother, who, God bless her, is impossible to deal with under the best circumstances. Mm-hmm. Really deteriorated. Just tremendously so. So there was essentially somebody was keeping watch at the house at all times. And I'm, you know, 13, 14, and I was being assigned watch shifts. And this was, if you think about a 14-year-old who's in this house with the person who's losing their mind, an aunt who's barely keeping it together, and just down the street, there's somebody in a coma, and they're constantly trying to go down there. You're telling them, no, you can't go right now. It's not visitation hours. You need to stay here. It's really hard to do that as a kid. So what I had at the time, I think I had already completed it, but WarioWare Twisted had just come out. And I'd burned through it because I was obsessive about those games. And I mean, I did everything in touch, and that game's terrible. And I was playing Twisted on my launch unit DS, which is the worst way to play that game. And I think I became so obsessed in it because it was so irreverent, so stupid, so it was painted this picture of, well, everything's dumb, it's fine, don't worry about it. Just laugh at how stupid these people are. And it was the only real out I had from this situation where, you know, you would be dropped off by your mother at her parents' house because she had just done a shift and she couldn't do another one. And you went in like, hey, has everybody had lunch? And you're like, you're talking to adults in this kind of situation to make sure they're not killing themselves with worry. And I think I played that game so much and so obsessively that it was to the loss of all things else. Like, I was shutting out reality around me. Cause I mean, I'd be left at home alone when my mother was taking them to go do visit and my father was going to their house to make sure everything was being taken care of. And I would be at my house and my sister would be with them cause she was still young. So I would be spending, you know, whole evenings in our house alone, just in my dark bedroom playing this game as the only light, as depressing as that sounds. But it was just because I might have started playing it around 5 and the sun went down and I was just so focused on this thing. The only thing I did was get the charger to plug the damn thing in. Cause there was tactile to it cause you're moving. And then there was sort of the goofiness of it. You know, headphones cranked all the way up. It was kind of this weird little like cocoon I put around myself. And there was not a month of gameplay in there, but I cranked it out cause that was all I had. Ugh. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that in so long, but thinking about it now, it's just, oh, I feel bad. Oh, don't like it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, I don't have a tragic backstory. I think that
good.
Like that's my
good.
My
thanks for that, man.
That's good, dude. Consider yourself fortunate.
Yeah. Well, my I don't know. Like I do see like my dad, you know, kind of declining, just, you know, not being as big as he used to be, like losing a lot of weight. And, you know, my parents are getting pretty old and I'm just kind of dreading the day when, I don't know, when I'm going to pick up, like long after they're gone, like pick up Wii Bowling or something and find like his score and his lightness in there.
Yeah.
You know, there's a story I cut out in like 2 episodes ago that I talked about, like my brother getting a divorce, and it was upsetting to see his wife's me like interacting with him on Tomodachi Life. You know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
That's like, just such a simple thing, but I can't even imagine like seeing a deceased loved one on there. I'm not sure how I'm gonna react. You know?
I mean, some people might find solace in that, but
sure.
I'm not sure how I would deal with that. It would be very strange.
Well, I would imagine it's like people that still have somebody's phone number who has died in their phone or like a voicemail, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Like they leave it there forever. They never get rid of it just because it's there. Mm. It comforts them to know that it's there.
It's rough.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
had a friend back in Colorado. Her brother was killed in the Iraq War. Probably about 10 years ago now. And she was, I want to say, like a young teenager when he died. He was maybe 5 or 6 years older than her. And he was young. I mean, he was like college age, you know, when this happened.
Yeah.
And I never knew him. I met her a few years later, when she was in college. But, she told me that, she didn't really play video games, but she played Halo.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, that's strange. And then I found out that it was because she used to play Halo with her brother, and it was the only thing that she really had left that she could do that she used to do with him.
Mm.
And so she said she would still play it sometimes because it reminded her of him. And I just remember thinking, what a strange game to be like a, you know, like a remembrance totem of someone else. I think that tells you that sometimes the game, it like the particular game doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. I mean, I've seen that happen with World of Warcraft too, that actually, and just read a story today where there was a father whose son died who played World of Warcraft, and he said, and I mean, this father's like 60, and he went on the World of Warcraft forums and he said, well, I wanted to reconnect with my son through the experiences that he enjoyed, so he wanted to start playing World of Warcraft. So it's not really the game that's important, it's kind of connecting with what these people were interested in, or what, you know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe understanding,
yeah,
you know, after the fact, maybe sort of trying to put yourself in their shoes and try to put yourself in their head a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, well, that was a bit of a downer, but I thought it was worth talking about. And anyway, we are getting close to the end of the show here, and we have some business to take care of at the end. So I think we're going to cut it off for emails, and we had a couple more picked out, but we'll carry those forward to next time because they're really good. So for everyone who has written in lately, I really appreciate it. We have got quite a few emails, things, you know, predictions, top five lists. There was
it's been a few weeks.
Yeah, it has been. And you know, some of them we're just not going to get to, but I want everybody to know we read all the emails. We really appreciate it. Any kind of feedback you want to send, any kind of input, even if we don't read it out on the show, it sparks our minds. We try to answer some of them directly, especially if we think it won't be read on the show for whatever reason. I certainly would say it helps if you can keep your email to one topic. Because otherwise, you know, the more editing I have to do to make it fit onto the show or kind of lead into a natural conversation, the less likely I am to pick it out. So if you can keep your email to one main topic, that would help.
I mean, you can send multiple emails. That's fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we might even use them to spread them out over multiple weeks, but, that helps quite a bit. And if you can keep it down to one or two paragraphs, that helps also. Cause we don't like reading, you know, really long scripts of things like that. But, I really do appreciate everybody who writes in. I considered the person who sent in his top five and his number one game was Sonic Boom for Wii U. But I was afraid James might not survive that segment.
Are you serious? I would be just laughing the whole time. Sonic Boom is Interworld Report's game of the year.
It is funny, but the argument was basically it's so bad that I love it. And we got some predictions. Some of them were just kind of long lists that it's not very readable on the show, but they're interesting. And then sometimes people just send emails right after we recorded a segment where we talked about that thing anyway. So
yes,
kind of bad timing there. We're probably not going to bring it up a second time, but it's good to know that people are interested in these topics, even if things kind of happen out of sequence there. But before we go, and I think this will help lift our spirits a little bit after a pretty serious conversation there. James, I know you have something
actual
that you
ass
got
listener
in
the mail.
Yeah, you got something like in the mail, and
this is not going to be a thing.
Can we call this your birthday present, James? Mr. Birthday Boy?
Yeah, it's 40. It's 39 minutes away, and hopefully, I actually make it after I open this box.
Yeah, this is an actual. We don't know what's in this box.
No, I'm
listener sent James something, and we don't know what it is. So we're going to find out.
In case this becomes part of the legal proceedings, this is from Delaney in Las Vegas. We have his email address. We know where he lives,
and we got a local Delaney, guy
will,
that can
I will
tune
hunt
him up
you
if
down
necessary.
And make you pay if you do something bad to Mr. Jones.
Well, I mean, based on the emails he sent me, he's done something bad. The question is it physically bad or is it just spiritually bad?
Yeah, let's hope it's just some kind of like a Kusoge master retribution.
Let's put it this way. I poked it with my foot when I walked up to the door. I was like, all right, let's make sure about this.
Like, yeah, make so sure it's so not snakes or something.
Yeah,
there's nothing spring-loaded.
What worries me is it made it all the way to the East Coast from Las Vegas, and he mailed it on the 26th. If it's alive, it's still alive. So let's open this. If this is a biological agent, let's open this away from my face. Oh. He quadruple taped it, which is not a good sign.
Mm-hmm. Oh. So whatever's inside couldn't get out.
It's the Necronomicon.
It's a gremlin. It's Gizmo's gonna come out. Don't feed it after midnight.
Might also be like that powder in Fringe that instantly melts your bones.
Well, that's why I opened it away from me.
I hope it's a giant box with an eShop card inside.
But oh my god, there's so much goddamn tape on this thing.
It's full of Choaniki amiibos.
It's just full of tape. All right. Oh, okay. We're in. Oh, there's a note. Oh.
It starts with, I'm sorry.
Please understand.
Yeah.
I'm just going to read it. I'm sorry. Let me say it again. And then in large letters, I'm sorry. It had to be done. I understand your fear. It will increase as you go.
It's a whole lot of apologizing.
Here is the best case. You have a heart attack from the horror inside and die. Worst case, you have to play this game.
Great.
Wow.
What's weird is there's a bunch of bubble wrap. Oh, good, another note. Great. All right.
Oh, God.
And this one's made of, like, letters cut out of magazines.
Maybe it's a real-life laden puzzle. Have you tried, like, holding the note to a candle, see if there is invisible ink?
Oh, no. Oh, my God. Okay. So the next note reads, "Let me ease you in. There will be three games in here," which is, he's already lied to me. He told me it was a game, so this is already a bad sign. "Progressively worse than the last. This one is bad. More boring than anything. Enjoy."
This is like Saw.
This isn't even a game! It's Pokemon Channel. What?
Pokemon Channel.
Whoa. What the fuck?
That's random.
So Pokemon Channel is a Wii game, quote unquote.
A Wii Activity Center.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what it is. So it comes with Pikachu.
It's a game
Brothers
for, like, toddlers,
in
basically.
In Party Panic. The PNF. Pokemon Newsflash. I mean, a lot of it's just
how
video.
Completely inappropriate.
A lot of it is just video.
It's
with,
got,
like, very
a coloring thing. It's also got the only Pokemon mini emulator that Nintendo ever officially released.
I'm thinking of PokePark.
No, not PokePark.
Kind of a sequel to, maybe, to Pokemon Channel?
No, no, Pokemon Channel is, like, three different types of videos, a coloring book, some Squirtle thing, and a Pokemon Mini emulator.
Okay.
By the way, Pokemon Mini, weird-ass system. All right, the next note was... Oh, seriously, that is the best game in here. That's the high point. The Mareep Channel, where you watch sheep jump a fence. I once let it go to see what happens. Nothing. Went 400 Mareep in, and nothing changed. Jesus.
The fuck?
All right, so another layer of bubble wrap.
Mm-hmm.
Another note. God, there's a lot of notes.
Another layer of another level of hell.
Between this game and Pokemon Channel, you will have suffered enough, if not something's blacked out, less than what awaits you at the bottom. I understand your fear.
This is definitely a production. This is,
all right,
it's riveting.
I'm not looking in the box. It is, appears physically, it feels like it's a GameCube box again. And right. Oh.
Yes?
It's Shadow the Hedgehog.
Well,
I'll kill you, Robotnik.
Played.
It's a Shadow the Hedgehog in a GameStop GameCube box.
Oh.
Insult to injury all over the place. Oh.
Hot garbage.
Let's,
man.
That's awesome.
To pause, speak about Shadow the Hedgehog.
With the GameStop taint on it, that is...
Yeah, it's...
Oh, man. Don't put
taint
that on a table.
Taint is the right word, John.
It'll eat through it.
That one goes back to, I believe, episode 1 of Radio Free Nintendo.
Probably does, yeah.
Certainly single digits.
I mean, somebody said, you know what Sonic needs? There. A, he needs Grimdark, and B, he needs guns.
Yeah, and he needs to murder Dr. Robotnik.
If you have yet to throw this package away at the sight of that title, congrats, you're almost there. He spelled you're wrong.
You're
he went
almost
with the wrong,
there.
It's the you're possessive almost there. So my almost there.
Own it.
More bubble wrap. All right, got another note. After this page, you reach the point of no return.
Really?
Good luck.
Now it gets really bad.
All right, what am I? All right, more bubble wrap. Okay. It is a box copy of Sonic Boom: Rise of Lyric. For the Wii U.
Oh, fantastic.
For the Wii U. Well, I look forward to your impressions of that one.
That's awesome. Rise of Lyric. Well, you and Don can have a very spirited discussion about that one.
More new adventures on Nintendo 3DS.
Yes.
Because if you played this and said, I need more.
Maybe this is the time that Sonic will glitch jump his way into your heart, James.
All right. All the bubble wrap. And there are no more mocking notes in there. So I'm going to go ahead and... I'm not going to say I'm going to start a fire.
You're probably not going to say thank you either.
There is a word, and it is followed by the word you.
It is.
Thank
it
you
is
the word I'm thinking of.
If you leave all those on the table touching each other, they might actually just spontaneously combust.
Well, I think that's why he had to put the bubble wrap between them.
Yeah.
I'm gonna put them here. I'm going to put them right here on this table. And then I'm going to set this table on fire. And then possibly this whole house, because the taint might have spread.
Yep. But don't try to throw them out the window because they'll just like fly back in like the mask and smack you in the face.
I would
face.
Assume the police would treat it like when you shoot fireworks out your window and they're like, whoa, that's dangerous, sir. Sir.
All right. Well, congratulations, Delaney. You have horrified James Jones and delighted the rest of us with that fun little radio play.
Hey, by the way, if anybody's – this is not going to become a thing. However, I do have these three assholes' address in case anybody's got any ideas now.
No. Decline. Yeah. Decline. Don't send me anything. I got too many games to play already. I surely don't need any bad
ones. Well, I mean,
to...
he sent me three games, but he didn't send me three games to play.
Oh, you're going to play them.
I mean, in Pokemon Challenge case, literally, it cannot be played.
Right.
It just happens to you.
You're going to watch it.
It's an experience. All
right. So, we do need to wrap up this episode, though. That was a lot of fun. Before we go, I want to repeat the email address. Again, we do have a couple more to do next time, but we're always looking for new emails, and that address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. You can follow us on Twitter, and before we go, I want to really quickly announce the next retroactive nominees. So, we've thought it over. These are sort of not random, but these are pulled from a lot of the suggestions that we got from people on the forums, over Twitter, emails. We considered a lot of it. A lot of good choices in there that we're definitely going to carry forward for next time. And we're probably going to do at some point this year an all RPG poll, because there were a lot of those that people want us to talk about, but the results of the polls often end up being biased towards that genre. So there are no RPGs this time. Instead, we're going to be, we're going to ask all of you listeners to vote among these three: Castlevania 3, Dracula's Curse, the NES classic, now available on your Wii U, or Wii, Pokemon Trading Card Game, the Game Boy Color Classic that is now available on 3DS.
I spoke about it a couple weeks ago. It's weird.
And that would be the first Pokemon game we'd ever done for retroactive. And Sin and Punishment, the Japanese import classic that is available on Wii Virtual Console. So, and that's a game that we've talked about many times, although it's been quite a while since it came up.
And it's probably the last time was around when we talked about Star Successor.
Right, which even that was probably 4 years ago. So, yeah, Sin and Punishment. Not exactly in the common conversation right now, but it's a fun game. So I think any of those three would be good discussions, and we will play whichever game wins the poll. So go to the show notes, for this episode, either, on our website, nintendoworldreport.com, or in the RFN thread at NeoGAF. And of course, follow us on Twitter at RFN Podcast. We'll give you all the details there. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/RadioFreeNintendo. We will make sure that you find out how to vote for this thing. And I'm going to look into some ways to let more people vote this time and make it a little bit easier for it, because we would really love, universal participation. And, whatever wins, these games are all available, very cheaply, at least in North America, I think most places. And, we really hope that a lot of you will play along with us and, make it a fun retroactive. So listen for more details on that, as soon as this episode is up. And for the next couple of weeks, we'll make sure that you know how to vote. And then we'll announce the winner and we'll start playing whatever game it is. So that's retroactive. I'm excited to bring it back. And that's the end of our episode. There's a bunch of it. So thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back next week.
Bye.
Later.
I have fire to go start.
Guillaume, it's funny you bring that up. I just heard of 90s Arcade Racer for the first time a few days ago from our friend Dan Bloodworth. I was out in LA for the weekend, and I got to hang out with Dan and several other people. Former site director Steven Rodriguez and Kim Keller was there, and Nathan Mustafa, and TYP was there, and we went over and played mini golf at Adam Contras's house. I don't know how many people who listen to this know who Adam Contras is. He was he wrote a few things for the website, but most famous for editing the 2002 Planet GameCube E3 DVD, which was the world's first E3 DVD that you could buy. And the only one that we ever did, because it almost killed Adam. And I was afraid he was going to quit the staff after that thing came out, even though it performed exceptionally well. We made money on that thing. We made quite a bit of money, actually. It supported the site for a couple of years, I think. So he did an amazing job. And Adam, I don't know that he plays a lot of video games anymore, but I know he did for a long time. But it was good to see him. It was fun to reminisce over like his infamous Mario Sunshine review, where I think he gave it like a 7 or a 7.5, and
oh god,
just short of death threats even back then.
To be fair, we've gone beyond just short of death threats to actual death threats.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, we've graduated. We're in the big leagues now. Poor Neil with Mario Kart. Well, I mean, 8.
I might have a letter bomb sitting on this table, so we'll see.